Hello and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, a podcast where we aim to discuss movies, video games, TV shows, comics, and anything else geeky that takes our fancy. My name is Phil, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, the dork from County Cork, Daz Murphy. I'm sorry, I thought that earlier on. That is the dumbest thing I've ever thought of. I'm definitely leaving it in. It's staying in.
That might be a new hashtag. That'd be fucking great. The dork. I'll get you next week.
Yeah. God, no, there's too many uncomfortable things that rhyme with Kulak. I don't want to hear that. So what's the crack with yourself, man? How are you getting on?
Very good. Settling into two children kind of territory and the planning necessary to do anything that comes along with that. It's been good. Managed to play a few things and watch a few things. And it's nice to wash the taste of Rebel Moon out of our mouth with hopefully an absolute banger of a movie this week. We shall see.
Yeah, hopefully. So for those of you at home that maybe haven't listened before or haven't watched before, now that we're on YouTube and TikTok, although I haven't actually properly set up the TikTok account yet, but you can look us up at Middle Age Geeks if you want to follow. I'll put some clips up there. And we try to do a movie review each week, and then we do like a retro corner. Sometimes we mix it up and do different things. But this week for our movie, we are doing 2023's Aquaman 2. I think, is it Aquaman 2 The Lost Kingdom or just Aquaman The Lost Kingdom?
Just Aquaman The Lost Kingdom, yeah.
Lost Kingdom, the sequel to the first one. And then
Aquaman retro but corner. Not Lost Kingdom.
Yeah. And then for the retro corner, because the new Prince of Persia game is coming out next week, we figured Daz is going to maybe take us through Prince of Persia Sands of Time. So we'll maybe have a little bit of a chat about that and the Prince of Persia maybe series as a whole. So, but before we get into that, I would be interested in hearing what else you've been getting up to this week besides watching our movie for the review.
I've been playing more RoboCop. Rogue City, which is I can't seem to get away from. It's nice. It's a little more challenging now. There's kind of more varied and challenging enemies. RoboCop still walks like a very slow moving tank, but you get too used to that. But then actually just earlier today, I came across this this kind of video game trope, you'll know like well, where you know as you power up and get through the levels, you get different enemy designs and variations on enemies. And this particular level introduced the sniper. So just like, oh, here we go, here's a sniper. And they leave a sniper rifle beside a truck for you or whatever. And when that happens in normal games, it's just like, oh, you got to run from cover to cover and avoid the sniper. And hopefully that, your sniper mechanics or the character mechanics are decent. But in this game, none of those things happen and are good. RoboCop cannot run from cover to cover. So if you're trying to get away from the sniper, you just take damage. There's just no way to avoid it. And the sniper mechanics are kind of clunky and there's a lot of sway and it's just... It's got to that point
Aren't you just getting pounded then by shots? You're looking down because you've got to stand still almost as this hunk.
Yeah, you've got to peer around corners and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you're not just getting pelted by bad guys then.
Pretty much. Because, they leave, a sniper rifle just there before the enemies are introduced to kind of let you know this is what's going to happen, but you get 10 fucking rounds. So once they're gone, you're back to your trusty Auto 9 fucking... sidearm, which is fantastic, but it's not good at fucking 200 yards, so it's it's not exactly game breaking, but it's gotten to a point where just kind of like, ah, come on lads, the clunkiness is starting to show a bit more, which is a shame because the level before that introduced bikers, so they're going around on motorbikes and it's like, oh, moving enemies, and you shoot them off and they pick up someone's bike and then fuck it 400 yards or 40 yards into a truck and just blow up a load of dudes, and it's pretty fucking great. But it's starting to show a bit of jankiness, bit of clunkiness, and I did fight Ed 209 yesterday.
Awesome. So
that was pretty cool. But again, another video game trope that's kind of maybe lazy design, where the only way to defeat him is to pick up gas canisters and fire them at him or throw them at him.
Right, but
you're just circling around this particular area, and the gas canisters, you just have to wait for them to respawn, which is just one of those, it's just such a dated fucking gaming element. It's a bit,
that's a pity, like, because he is, but for me, he's one of, like, Ed-209, it's one of the best movie robots of all time.
Fantastic.
Like, everything, terrifying. The design of him is incredible. The sound, the voice, everything they use from, like, it's so imposing. He's so awesome. So even if that level is shit, it still must be pretty cool to be seeing an Ed-209 walking around.
Yeah,
fucking,
absolutely. Because if he fights with you on the first part of 11, then he just goes haywire and just murders a load of fucking people, and then you face off against him. Still pretty cool. I'm loving the game far more than I should. I just need to get past the sniper level because I've died about fucking 20 times. That's pissed me off. But yeah, apart from that, like, I've been dipping into Jedi Survivor, and I need to finish, like, RoboCop or finish one of these other games so we can get back to Alan Wake and also Cyberpunk and Resident Evil 4. And with limited time, it's going to take me about 5 months to finish those fucking games. But on the watching front, I went down a weird one, actually. My daughter was, like, Santa got her Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for Christmas as one of her 4,000 presents. It's mad that you, like, how you don't get the credit and how much it annoys you that she's like, Santa's so great. Just like, is he fucking great? I bought you those fucking things. They're my favorite. So we started watching the cartoon, and it's like fucking 30, is it 35, almost 40 years old, like late 80s it started. And they hold up pretty well. You know what I mean? The first season, it's only 5 episodes, but we watched a few of them, and I was getting into it more than she was. And she's like, Daddy, this is boring. Or, you know, I think she said it's too grown up for her, and it probably is. It is a bit vicious. But I was watching that with her. And the reason actually I started watching that was I was on Netflix just flicking through something and came across this series that I'd never even seen before, which is The Toys That Made Us. Have you ever seen this?
Oh, yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. It's so good.
Fucking hell. It's just, I think I'd searched for it maybe a few years ago or something when it came out. I think there's one on Transformers, but there's one on Star Wars or Star Trek, and it's like a 45-minute history of the toys, and it kind of elaborates beyond the toys into the franchises and kind of how they started. And the Turtles one is great because it tells the story of the two guys, the art college guys, the buddies who started it off, and it just exploded, and the fame and money and betrayal and everything that went with it. That's really good. So that is, I'm looking forward to getting into the Transformers one and the Star Trek.
Check out the Star Wars one is great, as well, because it's you realize, like, how much money they made out of it for such a small amount. The fact that they got the license to license these toys, you know. I think there's a cool one from He-Man as well, you know.
And He-Man was so great. G.I. Joe as well, yeah.
Because He-Man was so different. He-Man really focused on looking different from every other toys that were out there. That really looked in realistic proportions, you know. And then He-Man came out and he's this fucking, you know, that human being wouldn't be able to walk around in real life, you know. He's just this fucking colossal thing. And then tiny little legs, like, he would just... He was Johnny Bravo.
Skip leg day.
But no, that's a great show. I think they do the toys, but they also do the movies that made us and stuff as well. Mm. A few different, but it's good nostalgia viewing, all right, for sure.
Yeah, and it's bite size as well. 45 minutes, it conveys a lot of information and takes you a nice trip down memory lane with a lot of nostalgia in 45 minutes. Is feckin' brilliant. How about yourself? What have you been up to?
I haven't really played anything since the last episode. I watched watching the bits and pieces here and there. I went to the cinema a couple of times. I went to see 2 movies during the week. I wanted to see Godzilla -1 before it was out of the cinema.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah, it was it's just, I don't know. I didn't check up what the budget is spent, but it just looks like you're looking at it going, God, they look like they've used it really smartly, you know. And whereas the other movies we see now with Godzilla and Kong and stuff, you know, it's so over the top and siege, but they sometimes still keep a lot of the stuff at night because it's easier for them to do these kind of things. Whereas they're like, fuck that. Like this, the attacks and everything that are happening in this are all done daytime kind of thing. And it's just the Godzilla, it's so reminiscent of the original Godzillas that would have been, you know, a dude in a costume. Like they've kept the size of them and all. They haven't changed him into this big weird lizard thing like they did with, you know, the Godzilla one with fucking what's his face? You know, what was that Garrett. One that had Hank Azaria and stuff in it? You know that one?
Oh Jesus Christ! Yeah, the
they just completely changed what Godzilla. Yeah, but he looks it looks great, and it's fun. There's some fucking real heartbreaking moments to it as well. It's, you know, it is funny parts. It just, it looks the business. There's some great tension in it. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's I highly recommend it. The other one I went to see, not so much. So as you know, I will watch anything horror wise, and this one was no different. Night Swim, I went to see, is essentially about a haunted swimming pool. So like, it's fucking, it's dumb as shit. Like this,
sold. Sign me up.
Yeah. Wow. It's so fucking stupid, and it's just the only impressive things about it are number one, like Kerry Condon's in it, and I'm like, you're just off the back of an Oscar nomination. You know what I mean? Anyway, Kerry Condon's in it. She's fantastic, because of course she is. So that's impressive. The fact that every actor in her is really giving it their all. Like she's great. Your man, I can't remember the other guy's name. He's in loads of stuff now. He plays like the other Captain America in that Winter Soldier and Captain America thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's in that. He's in 22 Jump Street as well. I can't remember his name. He's actually decent in it. They have no really complaints on the performances, but it's just how they managed to squeeze, I think it was like 98 minutes of a movie out of what is a haunted swimming pool.
Like, you know? Is it the water haunted? Why don't people stay in?
Well, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there is essentially...
You're drawn to the pool.
They go into the pool, and then the pool has special properties because the water, you find it near the start, the water, it isn't actually filled from like your tap next door. It's from this underground
magic
spring.
Water.
And that's what started, and then we find out that the spring is kind of haunted or something along those lines.
Right.
It's stupid as fuck. Definitely not. Yeah, it's one to watch on
don't
Netflix
win the pool.
Just to kind of go, this is fucking ridiculous. But so I had seen that first and went straight out and into Godzilla. So that was nice to kind of wash away that. Yeah. So I went out, got myself a large popcorn, went in to watch Godzilla and just came out going, you know, that was the right choice. I didn't watch those back to front. I haven't really watched anything else, just been kind of keep looking forward to some of the games and stuff that are coming out in the next week. Like we mentioned that we're going to be doing, that it's going to be next week with Prince of Persia, but there's also the remastered version of The Last of Us 2. And as you know, I'm just any excuse for me to revisit those games. And it's only 10 quid for if you've already bought the game, if you have the game.
I sold my physical copy. Just God damn it.
Oh, did you?
It's going to cost me fucking 80 quid or something.
Unless you can just, I wonder, it might even be cheaper just to buy the buy the physical copy secondhand or something.
Buy it again.
But
what have they done with it? It's updated graphics, and
I think it's just mostly updated. I'm not sure if there's any new modes or anything like that.
There's a roguelike mode, I think, but I don't know what exactly it's supposed to be. But
I replayed the first one when just after The Last of Us TV show came out last year.
I haven't played it since it came out.
I was like, just because, you know, we had we got The Last of Us Part 1, you know what I mean? So it was looking the business. So I said, fuck it. So I replayed that. So I didn't touch the second one because I'd heard there was going to be remaster. So I'll get stuck into that. So hopefully next week I'll be plowing into a couple of games. But before we get into the main feature, I did want to ask you, because it's something we touched on in an earlier episode. When we did our virtual reality episode, we touched on the new Apple Vision. And now that it's got a proper price point and a release date and all that stuff and release, are you surprised at the price? Because I think when we and you were talking, we were thinking it was $5,000 or $6,000. And they're saying now it's
Release it? It's $3,500. It's
dollars.
I mean, it's... Yeah. $3,500, dollars. But it's not as expensive and certainly not as cheap as you'd expect. That's a kind of a premium price, but $3,500, I mean, it's not exactly entry level for any, you know, you're not gonna just move over from your Quest, which is like $500 or $600. straight to this, but it is like I would normally be, you know, an early adopter of anything, kind of like yourself, mostly with consoles and tech and phones and all that. But with this, because it's the first version, I'll just wait until 2 years down the line, see how it goes. Yeah. And if, you know, if this, like, second generation one comes out for maybe a little less, like if it was around 1500, 2 grand, I mean, I'd entertain trying to use it as a tax write-off business-wise or something to try to get my hands on it. But after when I got the Quest 1, straight away it was brilliant, you know, the hands-free and all that. But when the Quest 2 came out, you know, I think it was even 18 months later, it was such a vast upgrade. But it was so close from the Quest to the Quest 2 that you couldn't really, you can't buy two of them. You know, it's just, it's not feasible. It doesn't make any money sense. But I'm excited to see when it comes out that, or to see more hands-on like demonstrations, because there's all the YouTubers and stuff that had their 15 minutes playing with it and all that. That's all well and good. But from a practical point of view, like, can you put this on your head for 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day as they're proposing? And how fucking weird does it actually look like when they project your face onto something? Because it just looks like,
yeah,
it looks bananas. Imagine sitting beside someone like that, like, hey, do you want a cup
that's
of tea?
Scary.
A
cup that of tea that would scare your children. Office.
Yeah.
You turn around with that coming out of the back what's of the room with and Daddy? Your two kids in the room. They'd have a fucking shit fit. God love them. I agree with
go
you.
Go better.
I
think, I'm going to put on the fucking mask.
I agree with you, though. If it was on launch, but this was now the second iteration, I'd be more likely to go, actually, you know what, maybe I might throw a few quid into it or I might purchase it, but because it's just the first one, even when consoles, like if a new developer came out making a brand new games console to compete with the others, I wouldn't be touching it on release. Not a hope, you know, and I think you're right in that wait and see how this gets on, wait and see what kind of support it gets, wait and see what applications it can have that maybe we haven't thought of yet. That said, if there's anybody who works for Apple who happens to be listening to the podcast right now, feel free to send us one for us to test and give us our honest reviews.
There was a bit of feedback that I got just talking about VR from Mark in Dublin, just about the Meta Quest 3 that he picked up. Have you seen the new game Asgard's Wrath 2?
Like
the reviews are through the fucking roof. And he just asked, was I going to play it or was going to review it or was going to tackle it at all? And for me, like VR, I love VR and all that, but this is a fully fledged RPG, you know, 60 hours plus for the main story alone and an additional maybe 30 hours in side missions and stuff that I don't think I could keep a headset on me. No matter how light, for more than 2 or 3 hours. Anyway, even the Quest, and it's quite light, and the PSVR 2, when I was using it, you know, you might play a racing game for a few hours. But an RPG where there's a lot of movement, you're walking around, you're standing up and combat and all that. I think I'd stick to racing games and like table tennis or Beat Saber, on-rail shooters and stuff like that. But, it's just the scores are just fucking through the roof. Like it's like 92 on Metacritic. It's just unbelievable.
I got motion sickness just looking at the fucking trailer. Like, so I won't be touching it. Hello, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting year for VR. It seems.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, it's only the pre-orders for this start, I think, next week, and then you know, we'll start seeing in a couple of weeks' time. Then we'll start to see some of the early reviews come out. So yeah, we'll be sure to talk about that on some of the upcoming episodes.
Try to get our hands on something.
Well, look, with that part out of the way, we're going to move on now to our movie review. So this movie we were hoping would be going to end our run of run of shit movies. So we had decided to review this long before it came out. We have a schedule of stuff that we wanted to review, and we wanted to give people a few weeks to watch this one. So this was the next on, so we didn't watch it together. So I'm interested to hear what Daz thinks. judging by the fact that he's laughing, he probably thinks something similar to me. But yeah, before we get into it, give me your overall first reactions. What did you, what was your overall take?
I thought it was very obvious. It's completely pointless, and it, a rudderless movie. And after 10 years and like 15 films, the DCEU ends with this, and it's kind of fitting because it's that whole, 10 years, 15 movies has been an epic failure, I think. And this movie is, well, not absolutely complete dog shit like Rebel Moon. There's some nice moments in this, but it's, I was just bored. Just bored. Like, Jason Momoa is really good at doing one thing, and that's being Jason Momoa. And even in this, there's moments where you can see he's not exactly phoning it in, but he definitely looks like he's jaded, and he's just trying to turn on the charm, and he just knows this is pointless. It's going nowhere. It's a movie that it doesn't even reference the DC universe whatsoever. I thought it was pretty poor.
I suppose. Even just that would be my entry thing as well. I thought I have it there. Like, that's what I was saying. There's nothing new here. You know, if anything, thank God we're getting a reboot. It's like the movie. The CG, it's just a massive CG of what the fuck is going on kind of CG. And it's ADR over the CG as well. They're trying to explain that this looks fucking mental. So we're going to have some character explain what the shit is going on, you know?
Oh, yeah, there's so much explanation.
To get stuck into it, you would be forgiven if you started watching this movie and thought, is this an advertisement for Guinness? The product placement for Guinness at the start of this movie is out of control. Like, it's like multiple times for the start of it. And not even Guinness, just the Guinness cans, just the Guinness proper Guinness glasses, the whole lot. It's like, hang on a second, this is so heavy. It's not just them happen to hold one. He's walking to the room and the focus is just on the can, his hand in the can. Yeah. Like, fuck gigantic, a superstar Jason Momoa. But it starts off with... we'll be kind of just doing a whistle stop tour this week. I think we're not going to go into as much detail as Rebel Moon because we put more thought into Rebel Moon than Zack Snyder did. So I don't, we're going to just get through this a little bit quicker. So this one here, directed by James Wan, who did the first one, mostly known for his horror stuff. And hopefully this is the last time he does one of these movies. I think he's great. He's great ideas, especially when it comes to horror, but it's just not so much of this, but we start off, we're getting a monologue from him, like a voiceover from him where he's talking about his life, what's been going on. Before that, it's weird. Like, he's going, there's all these pirates who are, I think it's a ship or something they're on, and they're knocking down these people. They're knocking this, and it's so over the top. They're making them into these over the top, the bad guys. They're knocking down these like peasant people, and they're just laughing and celebrating to themselves. Yeah, did you see this piece of shit I just knocked down? It was like, you're trying to make this just, they're trying to make them look as evil as possible so you won't mind like a man comes up and batters them. But he's given this story, he's given this kind of thing about what's gone, and he's like, yeah. For some reason, decides he wants to introduce the seahorse that he's on. He's like, I'm going down, I have to do this with my life. I spread my life between my family on land and being the king. So you see him kind of looking bored when he's down in Atlantis, but under the water and shit, at all these meetings and shit that he has to go to as king. But then when he's up, he's him and his son. You show he has the birth of his kid, who's Arthur Jr. And it's all, you know, hijinks as he's fucking trying to look after his kid and all the stuff that's going on.
The fountain of piss was kind of funny that he dodged water. Water changes direction.
Mira comes in and she can control water and she makes the piss hit him in the mouth. And it's you know, it's funny. And there's some, what's interesting about that whole kind of start dynamic thing is we get the opening of monologue and we see him in the house, and it's trying to just give us an idea of what Aquaman's life is like on the day to day. What is the fucking living situation like? Is his mom and dad still together, and do they live in that house? And do Aquaman and Mira and the baby all live in that house as well? Are they all living in the same gaff or something? Is that made clear? Like,
not
who's there? How often? What's the split? Does he sleep under the ocean? And what does he only eat when he's on land? He starts talking later on about having cheeseburgers and stuff. None of that's really made clear at the start. It's just like he's splitting his life between the two. That's all you need to know, because it's going to be
relevant. They don't actually show his life. They show three scenes of him with a baby,
with the baby basically.
Sitting down with his dad, chatting, having a fucking another can of Guinness. And they actually say sláinte, which I thought was cool.
They say sláinte, which is insane. Yeah. But like neither of them are supposed to have anything to do with our Irish at all, and they're saying sláinte. But like there's no, as you said, we're getting this, his day to day. It's in Atlantis or it's on the table. They're not getting him. We've been setting up movies of him interacting in the universe with fucking Batman and the Flash and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They're not mentioned. We don't see him interacting with them. We don't see him saying when shit's going down and it's going to affect the surface world, there's no going, well, look, I better get on to the lads and say, here, listen, you want to give me a hand? Or listen, lads,
any chance of a dig out?
Going down. Get yourself ready. Yet. There's none of that, you know? So that's our opening. We get a revisit to him, and then straight after them, we get a revisit to the bad guy from the first movies, or one of the bad guys, who is Black Manta. So at the start of the first movie, spoilers, Black Aquaman has... He left, basically, Black Manta's dad to die. They were on a submarine trying to steal some shit, and he's after getting impaled, and he leaves him there, and, you know, go save him yourself. Mm. You shouldn't have been in here. You know, it's your fault. Yeah. These are... But sailors are going to die and shit. So he's basically out to, that's his main thing, is I want to get Aquaman and I want to kill him. And he's basically has these scientists that are going out trying to find Atlantean weapons and stuff so he can get his power suit and get power. So look, then maybe maybe this is kind of a time if you want to kind of jump in and have dumped what the start of the movie is. What was your feelings around that?
I liked the interplay with the scenes with him and or Aquaman and his father, because you can see what they're trying to do. You know, as you're saying, they don't do it very well setting up his family life. But they have a sit down, you know, with himself and his dad, and they're trying to emphasize, you know, the struggles and the family life that he wants to have, and juggling with the king, with being a king. But his dad, what's his, something Morrison, Tamora Morrison or something, his name is?
I never got his name right. Boba Fett.
Yeah, like he just comes across as a far superior actor in these scenes while doing a lot less. And Jason Momoa is, like, those scenes, while trying to be very poignant and family orientated and setting up a nice theme and tone, it's just, they're just so imbalanced, because he's a far better actor, and Jason Momoa is, as I said, good at being him. But when he's put in scenes with people who are decent to very good character actors, it just becomes, I just kind of start to tune out a little bit. Just kind of go, what exactly? It's Jason Momoa. He just looks silly when he's trying to be very down to earth in a scene with his father or whatever, with his eyeliner and fucking stupid tattoos, and say, it's just, yeah, it just looks ridiculous. But the Black Manta, we'll get to his costume and all that later on, but it's just a ridiculous villain, cannot take seriously at all. And his ship, do we see a ship by this point? It's the most stupid.
No, we haven't
looking
got
submarine
so,
thing. Oh my god.
The reason how he gets all that, I suppose we'll get onto that part now, like how he gets that shit is he has these scientists looking for stuff for him, and Randall Park is one of the, he plays one of the scientists, and I love him, and I think
he's
good at this.
He's pretty good, yeah.
But it's gas, like he has a dictator, one of those old fashioned like dictator things. I assume that's it, where he has his phone in his hand. Either way, he basically gives us this massive exposition dump, and dictation. Yeah, and it's like, it's just the laziest way. Someone went, look, we have to give them all this info. I'll tell you what, let's just have Randall Park talk to himself. And so he's just fucking filling in everything, why they're doing this, da-da-da-da-da. And he ends up, Randall Park's out, they get to find this signal that something's fucking being found under the ice. They fall down, and this big fucking creature, fucking, whatchamacallit, the Kraken kind of fucking thing, comes out and starts, gets his mate who is with him, and he has to call in for help. Manta comes down, and while they're there, they find this trident, right? So this trident is fucking broken in half. Manta picks it up, fucking jams it together, and as soon as he does, he gets this, like, vision of this other being who tells him that he can give him the power to go and give back. So, and so it's around here that he starts getting then, they get all the old, it's old Atlantean fucking technology, basically.
Mm.
And it just, it does, it looks like a Stingray. Do you remember Stingray the puppets, like the fucking Thunderbird style puppets?
It's like a bad 70s sci-fi like show or something.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's something like that, or fucking Leagues Below the Sea. Like, it's a real super retro looking thing. Big, huge, like, the controller, the controls and the panels are like with big red knobs on the top of, you know, chrome poles and stuff. It's just ship wheels
to turn, you know, with all this technology, you still turn like fucking this. Yeah, fuck's sake.
It's lost in space style, you know, controls to everything. And so the idea is that he's gonna give him the power. I think this fight is basically, whoever gets it basically tells him, I'll give you the power to fucking take down your enemies. But we get like a time skip then, I think, of a few months. I think maybe it's 5 months. And Manta is out there and he's trying to mine this stuff called Auricalum. Is it Auricalum? Auricalum? Whatever the fuck it's called. And he needs this to power all these machines. And the thing about the machines, right, and this is throughout the first and the second one, which I found weird, and they do it a lot with movies and stuff that are under the sea, is that they make all their fucking cars and their machines all look like things from the animal kingdom. Do you know what I mean? Like some of the animals, they look exactly like squid. He's using this squid fucking creature. And when the good guys come in to stop them, they're riding and their motorbikes are sharks, like robot sharks. One of the big huge tanks has turtle fucking fins. And hang on a second. That would be like me if I had to get to work rather than driving my car and I had a robot horse. You know what I mean? Like I just put that in and rode the robot horse in. I mean, it just because that's what we would normally ride around. It's just why are you making that robot fucking versions?
Fantastic.
That sounds awesome. That reminds me of Brave Star. But I mean, that's what you're doing. If you're not going to ride real sharks, that is the next change from, okay, we can't use the real sharks. They're not into it. They don't want it anymore. Get off me. They go, well, let's just make a robot one of them instead. Like, is that really the next thing? Could you not just make a fucking speeder bike style thing or something? Yeah. I just thought that was so weird. I'm like, why is it? Everything has to be fucking themed. Like, did SeaWorld give you all the plans for this? You should make this look like this. Make this look like a fucking squid. Make this look like a mollusk or whatever the fuck.
Anyway, but it's just them. It's showcasing that they're all in touch with, you know, their seafaring underwater fucking life, man, you know?
It's bollocks. Yeah. You know, it is. It's Disney stuff, you know, which is fine if it's a cartoon. It ain't. That's the idea, is they're going to rob all this stuff, and they find out he's been doing this for months. He's been raiding all these different Auricalum mines to get this stuff, which is Aquaman is then told, listen, we had to fucking lock all this stuff away in these places because we were using it. Then we found out it was mad poisoning, and it was poisoning the world. It was going to end up poisoning the surface world, and so we sealed it around, sealed it away. But Manta is trying to get in there and fucking and get all this shit out, the power ships, and to destroy everything. He just wants to fucking kill Aquaman. He's lost the run of himself altogether. So it's kind of, it's around here we get our next, this is kind of the part that's going to lead us on to the next part of the movie. And that's when we're going to get Patrick Wilson, his brother Orm, brought into it. So, you know, he finds out what prison he's being held in, and he has to go and break him out. So what were your feelings around this whole breakout of Orm?
Well, first thing, like, he has a camouflage suit now. Like, what's...
Yeah.
What was that all about?
A camouflage suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so he could sneak in. Yeah.
Just it's that moment where it's just... Again, you just kind of tune out a bit because you're just like, oh, here's another... It's like someone trying to speed on the sequence in the writing room and just go, well, if we just give him a fucking camouflage suit now, then he can just, you know, get there and we'll just move it along and save ourselves a few fucking million dollars. This movie like was plagued by like reshoots and all that. That probably explains Jason Momoa's kind of scene to scene. Sometimes he's up for it. Sometimes he seems a bit jaded. But those kind of cracks in the script and things been kind of placed together pretty shoddily starts to come to the fore with this kind of sequence. It's I thought it was pretty shit. Like, visually, I thought it's a bombardment of madness at the best of times. But for me, it's when he went, like, I'm always when certain lines of dialogue are said, I almost have to pause the movie, or I'll lose track of what the fuck is happening here. But with this, when he gets to his brother and says, you just can't believe someone actually wrote this down on a page, submitted it, and then someone said, "Yeah, that's fucking great." He was like, "Come on, Castaway, let's get out of here," he says to his brother, who's obviously a little scrawny after being in prison. And you're just like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, you know, would you not? Should be ashamed of fucking writing that. Let alone delivering the line.
Did you all get that reference? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did everybody get that reference, guys?
Tom Hanks
guys,
movie. I exist in the real world. I've seen movies. Like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. But, yeah. What did you think up to that point?
Yeah, the action set piece, did you rate it? Yeah, not really. Like, it's one of the only bit of set. It was the first bit of action sequence that we got on land, and there's one smaller one later on. But you're seeing the difficulty with him, I think, as well, is acting. Part of it is him acting on his own to nothing. So he's getting in by way of this little helper octopus that they give him, whose name I forget. I think it's Topo or something, maybe. And they're giving him this guy to go in, and he's supposed to be a little bit of comedic back and forth between him and this, you know, intelligent octopus.
Hmm.
Well, obviously he's just acting to green screen, and I just felt that it was just a bit awkward. I didn't really get it. It was definitely the case, as you said, that they didn't have to cut out how he was going to break into this prison if they just give him like Predator style invisibility suit where he can just fucking appear. Yeah. But like, he goes in, breaks out his brother. As you said, they have that stupid fucking line. It's like, "I'm not going to help you. Help me."
They
have to fight. They have him locked basically in this prison where he's deprived of water. They give him a little bit to keep him alive, but not enough because apparently having water will make him strong. So they don't want to give him too much. They keep him starved in like a desert style prison. When they get out and they have to run away from these lads who come out for them on fucking monster horse things, whatever, monster creatures, they come belting after them. And when they get to the water, right, this is the fucking most bizarre thing. Like, Patrick Wilson is, as you said, Castaway. He's super fucking skinny. Yeah. He's gaunt. He's been locked up, as far as we know, for the last few years after he got beaten in the first movie. He falls into the water. He gets thrown into the water, whatever happens. And the water splashes over him, the salt water. He gets up like fucking goddamn Popeye after eating some spinach. And he is ripped. He's fucking ripped. He's like, "Hang on a second. He didn't have to eat anything. He didn't do anything. He just literally just got splashed over by the water." And he comes up and he's fucking ripped. And he just starts kicking the shit out of people. Magic fucking salt water. Kicks the shit out of people. Left, right, and center. Like, it is. It's an amazing transformation. But they end up going, "Right, we have to get out of here." And the two of them piss off into the water, and then this is where we go off. I think this is where he has to go and meet the mother, and we see Dolph Lundgren and the big crab king fella, and they say, "Okay, look, we have an idea where he's going to be next. He's in this kind of jungle, fucking mad jungle area," and the two of them have to work together then to look out for each other. I have to say, though, it does come and go buddy cop, but for me, their interactions were the best part of the movie. I think that there's so much
Patrick
chemistry.
Wilson is, so yeah, I'd watch him all day long. He's fucking brilliant.
He's great. Like, he's great. Because he's known, I suppose, for a lot of horror stuff, but he's got great acting chops. He's great comic timing. And I thought the two of them played off each other very well, because you're not asking Momoa to carry a scene on his own, you know,
which he can't do.
Yeah, and he's happy joining him on the kind of the jokey kind of vibe that he's on. Like, whereas, as you said, maybe with his dad, you're getting into kind of serious heart-to-heart stuff that maybe Momoa's range doesn't hit. When he's having the crack with him, they're taking the piss out of each other. It's fun. There's hijinks. They're fucking knocking things over.
It's kind of frat boy versus kind of straight-laced brother.
It's real brotherly kind of thing, you know, ribbing and stuff. And I thought that their thing was the only really saving grace for me, was their interactions. Their scenes were fun. I enjoyed watching their scenes, even though, okay, the dialogue was ridiculous, but watching the two of them interact was actually fun.
There's that bit, though, in the when they're in the forest thing, and I'm talking a lot about tropes this week, but like another one of these movie tropes where they come across the big ravine, you know, they can't cross it, and then there's a giant statue, and it's one of these things. It gives you a clue as to like how one should pass. What's it says? A true king builds bridges, and you're just like, ooh, you know. Of course, an Aquaman takes a run and fucking slams into the statue to try and knock it over, and it's like a comedic beat, and he falls over, and his brother's like, "What are you doing?" And then the statue kind of starts to crumble and falls across, and lo and behold, creates a fucking bridge. But you're like, how long ago was this inscription fucking written? You know what I mean? And
like
that, what if you just there with a helicopter and you just kind of go across, and just someone's like, "Fuck, I wrote that cool puzzle for no fucking reason." Like, what the?
It just barely makes the gap, and we're talking fucking thousand bleeding years of erosion and everything else. And it's like, it's just,
and if it crumbled with Jason Momoa knocking it, like imagine if it just fell over and then just smashed into fucking pieces. Just like, well, that's a pretty stupid fucking puzzle thing. It's just so, it's just so, it's like something from the 80s or something. It's so bad.
And this island is kind of like the island from like Skull Island kind of thing. They're being attacked by giant fucking insects, you know, and stuff like that. That's what they're running away from. And they manage, those insects fucking fall down. They can't, they don't cross the bridge. They fall down, they all die. And so they're gone off hunting to fucking find this trident. And they find out then, with the help of like the Dolph Lundgren and all the rest of it, that where the trident belongs to and what the crack is there, and really the trident belongs, and the visions that are coming to Manta are from this king called Kordax, and he's actually the brother of King Atlan. But he was into all fucking black magic and controlling people and all this stuff, and so King Atlan locked him away with some sort of powerful spell that he's just going to be fucking frozen forever. But the stupidest, why he put this thing in that would help him. So he's like, right, he's locked away forever. But there is one way to unfreeze him. I was like, why? What?
There's
why
always a way.
Why? Yeah. Why put it in that way? You're the one locking him away. Don't put anything in that might help this prick get out of here. But anyway, Manta finds out that okay, there is a way to release this fucking monster king who's going to help him kill Aquaman, and that way is to spill Aquaman's blood, or someone of that bloodline.
Family member.
So he's like, well, look, he doesn't know. Dad's safe. I'm fine. You're here. Everything's grand. And oh my God, Junior's back home. So Manta has gone to the gaff where apparently everybody lives. And he's beat the shit out of his dad, stabbed him, and he's taken the kid. And he's like, okay, he's going to sacrifice this kid, which is fucking dark as fuck, but he's going to sacrifice this kid, spill this kid's blood on this like ice altar thing, and that's going to release your man. But Randall Park ends up switching sides, and instead of handing him over the baby, hands him over like a fucking bomb or some shit like that. And you know, he helps fucking save him. Like, Randall Park's on the side of the good guys. He's actually kind of switched earlier on in the movie, you know, when they first kind of capture him, and he explains everything. But this is him really showing, no, I don't want any part of this. I just wanted to study Atlantean shit. I didn't know you were going to start killing babies and trying to wipe out the planet with all these. You know, because that's what they find when they're on that island. They find that their man's had this big reactor thing, and he's just gonna destroy the whole fucking world with these noxious gases that come from this auriculum thing, whatever, that I keep mispronouncing. what did you think of that setup? I mean,
it's clunky and fucking load of nonsense, but I like the action sequence with them when they're teaming up against the tentacle things. Kind of good body action beats, and it was a pretty decent scene. There's no stakes whatsoever, but it was kind of good. But then, that was a nice enough scene. But at the end of that, you get the proper reveal of Manta. In his suit, and he just looks fucking. It's just he emerges from kind of smoke and stuff, and it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, seriously, he looks like a wrestler from the 90s or something with a big stupid fucking helmet, red bug eyes.
Insane. I genuinely thought after
black light gray as well. Yeah,
Yeah, I assume he looked like that in the comics. Like he looked like he has. I never read Aquaman comics as a kid, but I think think Manta does have this big fucking noggin, which is fine. It's a character, you know, it's a comic. But I thought after the feedback they were kind of getting from the first movie of, listen, this thing looks fucking insane, mate. Like just change it for something else. Like, surely those head, beams. Like... yeah, surely those beams that you need to come out like this big insect head fucking thing. You can just give him one. Give him one. Give him like a fucking Cylon Cyclops. Head, you know, which is one laser beam. Yeah, something along those lines instead. Yeah, no, I agree. When he comes out, he's just like, how much did you spend on this? Like, this looks like something you'd see someone walking out costume, for in Batman. Or like in Batman and Robin or something, you know, and you walk
He's got the black, it's like black lycra, but then he's got like a diamond,
the metal
like
bits.
Cheap diamond neck piece or something. It's like, oh my God, I'm in the red corner. It's this Ant-Man, red eye, dude. It's laughably bad. Like it's almost embarrassingly bad.
We mentioned Power Rangers before. It was like that. It was like a giant, if you expect to see him in a giant, looking like a giant in a load of fake cardboard buildings kind of thing. You go, okay, but yeah, that was insane.
But like his brother, there's a nice moment when his brother tries to run at Manta and just gets knocked the fuck out. And it's pretty good, pretty funny. But then again, this kind of cool moment is just followed so beautifully by a banger of a line, which I have written here, which is like, I was going to kill you last, but thanks for dropping by. And you're just like, who is writing this fucking shit? But it's just like, and it's delivered
I know James Wan directed. He did some of the writing. I'm kind of hoping for his sake. I've watched some James Wan movies with some insane writing in, so it kind of wouldn't surprise me, you know?
It's delivered insane. with all the charisma of a fucking doorknob or something. It's so straight and it's like, it just falls so flat. You need to have some tongue in cheek there or something. They'll wink to camera, you know. So bad.
And he's knocked down, but he's knocked down and that kicks in. There's like the fight of, you know, Aquaman and thing take over. I think he throws the trident and I think Mira like fucking jumps in and saves Aquaman by knocking it out of the way. Yeah. She actually has a couple of times in the movie where Mira is played by Amber Heard, who comes in and actually kind of saves his arse a couple of times in it. I was very surprised by how much she was in it. I didn't follow that whole Johnny Depp her in case, but I thought that she was going to be either written out of it or they'd have her at the starting scene, because they just wrote out Willem Dafoe's character, and I thought maybe it'd be something similar where they just explain, you know, she's gone off to fucking... follow her dreams, or
I thought she'd be at the start, like as necessary for the story and setup of the family and the kid and all that. Yeah. But then she kind of disappears from the movie, and I just thought that would be it. Maybe she'll pop up at the end, you know, beside him at the throne or something like that. But yeah, she's in it in a few pivotal moments towards the end, which is get out of jail free card.
So like she shows up, she saves him, and then. We have what's his face? Orm ends up fucking picking up the trident, and the same thing that happened to Manta happens to him. He puts the thing together, and then he gets this fucking thing, and it's straight away the king is poisoning his mind. You know, Aquaman, he stole your kingdom. He's fucking, you know, you're going to be the lesser brother, and you want your kingdom back. All this kind of fucking stuff. You could be king, and just poisoning his mind as you do. You know, and. The way you know his mind is being poisoned is because his eyes turn green. It's like, oh shit, he's possessed. When their eyes turn a different color, he's obviously possessed. So he starts having a fight then. Orm and Aquaman are having a fight back and forward. And during the fight, Aquaman gets fucking knocked onto the pillar. He spills some of his blood, and that's enough then to release the king. So the king's fucking ice around him all starts melting again. Why did you have this? What a stupid rule to allow this fucking guy get out. Anyway, he gets out, but man, they take care of him so quickly. Like he's there fucking thing. He's barely manifested himself as.
He didn't even get off a monologue and he gets a trident in the head.
He's barely fucking thing. He's coming up and he's gonna bring all the fucking, bring all these Army of the Dead style fucking bad guys back and everything. And then, they just fucking. He mills his fucking cool trident, his whatchamacallit, his gold trident or whatever. I think Randall Park throws it to him, just shouts, Aquaman, and throws him the trident at one point. Like, oh, shut that. Anyway, it's so cheesy.
Some of the visual effects on that bad guy, or that evil final bad guy, were fucking shocking. I thought, anyway, some of the worst I'd seen since fucking Scorpion King. It's like, what was it, a rewrite, or did someone just, you know, how much money we've got left in the budget? Like, let's throw something together for this guy. That's why, like, they obviously either ran out of budget or ran out of fucking the balls to just follow through with the script, because, you know, that's the big, bad, evil fight. And as you say, it's about 15 seconds and he's fucking dead. It's just like,
well, yeah, they throw a trident and it's just fucking, yeah.
If the visual effects are that bad, when he's just standing there, if the visual effects are that bad, it's like, obviously, just like, well, no money to animate him walking around, so let's just have him stand there and, yeah, let's just kill him.
Kill him off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
They take him out so easily. There was another cool part, actually, just after that. So the place is fucking falling apart and they're going to need to get out of there. And Manta is fucking hanging on in this fucking trench, you know, and he's going to fucking die. And Aquaman puts a hand out and goes, you know, like, oh, look, I'll save you. You know, reaching out to save your enemy. And Manta just, you know, Manta is like, I'd rather die. He's just like, never, I'd rather die. Yeah, no, and he just fucking jumps back and lets himself. I assume he gets killed. You know, I don't think Steam surviving this one. Plus, it doesn't really matter because this is the last movie. But I thought that was pretty cool because they could have shown him out, maybe even had him, either him locked up or trying to give him some sort of, you know, half-arse redemption. I like the fact that it just shows he never learned anything. He never learned to let go of his rage and his hatred for Aquaman. He's like, even at that moment where it's your life, you know, better take the hand, get out of there. And maybe you'll live to kill him again. Who knows? But he's like, I'd rather be saved by you. I'd rather die.
Yeah, there's more character development in that scene than his entire arc over probably fucking two movies. You know?
Yeah. Oh, he's fucking pointless in the first movie. They didn't need him in the first movie even.
No.
So he gets killed, and then they go back. We get their little reunited scene with fucking Dolph Lundgren and the crab guy, because like there's been a big huge fight because they've tried to invade. I've always left out a big chunk of it there where they've attacking Atlantean. There's big huge fights between.
But that's just so much stuff just thrown at the screen.
Yeah, I didn't even bother putting it down when I was doing my little notes for what we were going to talk about. It's a big CGI mess of nonsense that isn't important to the story. So I just didn't bother with it. Like
it's shite. Yeah,
yeah, it's color but not. So just said fuck, I leave that out. But anyway. We see the aftermath. There's been an earlier joke how the crab man before the last movie had lost his hand and it grew back. And so this time he's like, look, I fucking lost my hand again. It's your man, Jonathan Rhys-Davies does the voice of him from Lord of the Rings and stuff. So they kind of just, they have a chat there with Orm and they're like, listen, mate, we'll just tell everybody you died, the thing, you know, so you don't have to come back to prison. I know that was the plan. We'd fucking send you back. Why don't we just say you died? Go off and enjoy the world, you know. So he goes, thanks a million, you know, brother, wanker, because he's refused to even call him brother or anything, but he's just, they're mates now, you know. And so anyway, he fucks off and we kind of get a little bit of a thing about what's happening afterwards.
A montage and shite.
Yeah, we get a montage and it's basically Atlantis is being revealing itself to the world.
Style,
you know.
The ending. God.
Yeah, and so it's him and he thinks he's going up and he's having a speech and he's fucking being ecstatic and talking to the world basically on this thing. And like, but he's all, it's just Jason Momoa fucking just, like they just told him up and said, listen, mate, say whatever you want. We don't give a shit. Movie's nearly
just
over.
Do whatever.
We've spent months recording this piece of garbage. Come and just say whatever you want because he's just taking the piss. He's just like,
it makes no sense because like the speech that he's given, obviously that he must have given because he's standing at the podium. He must have given this speech before going all fucking rock star because he's like, we as Atlantis, you know, we work together and harness, you know, each other's powers and love the sea and all this kind of stuff. So he's obviously standing on the podium saying that really like, straight and poignant and all that, and then this way, I'm fucking Aquaman. Where the fuck did that go? It's just like that's exactly how the fucking failed DCEU exits after 10 years at Exit. Yeah. With that scene, stage left with a final scene and a fucking line that showcases how clueless and rudderless and fucking shite the whole thing has been. It's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And that was it. Like, we get, like, we don't get after credits. We get, like, a thing of Orm eating a burger. You know, they cut to him. He's kind of in a restaurant, and because earlier on he's thought, how have you never had a cheeseburger? Because Orm's never eaten any earth food. And so it's him enjoying a cheeseburger and a fucking rest normally. And it's just.
That's it.
And that's it. That's the DCU. Not just that's Arkham, how they sign off. DCU. That's how they sign off, you know? And it was, as I said, it was a tough watch. It wasn't a good movie. Now, the thing about it is that as shit as it was and as nonsense as it was, that relationship between the two of them and their buddy kind of thing, there was enough comedy in that and enough enjoyment that I would actually say I enjoyed this more than Rebel Moon.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because it's got a bit of something with the two of them. And some of the action sequence, some of the stuff is good, some of it's fucking terrible. And the CG is just, it's overkill. It's a different type of Zack Snyder stuff that we were talking last week about turning something up to 11. James Wan has kind of gone, fucking, let's just fill the frame. He's obviously thinking, you know, IMAX. Fill the frame with as much colourful, weird, wonderful fucking robot shark things and whatever that he can. But it's an assault on the senses in the wrong way. It's just like, what the fuck is going on here? And some nice interplay then with some characters, but yeah, it's just a mess. And yeah, I'd love to see what the first draft of that script was before draft 27, because it's reshoots and it just felt a bit all over the shop.
And they almost use some of the same kind of action beats in the movie, like there's, I think, twice.
Oh, he gets hit with
he has this cannon on the back of that old style looking submarine, and he's able to use that. That'll fucking knock Aquaman and everybody else out. It's like a sonic pulse thing. But two different occasions he gets hit by that.
The same thing.
And there's another one, I didn't make note of it, but there's another one as well like that, where it's two different things that, like, okay, we've already done this part of it. You don't need to fucking do this again, you know? Or
yeah, surely in the third act, you're expecting him to overcome fucking way.
Yeah, like the assault, you know, against the fucking Atlanteans and the thing. He's like, this is from the first movie. Like, you've done this already in the first. It's the same fucking director as well. We've seen you do this. You don't need to do it again. And it was just, it was hard work in that way. Like, the money that was spent on this as well, you know, the budget was $205 million.
Fucking hell.
So far. Yeah, it's brought in, I think, 320 or 330 or something so far. You know, so it's not even going to make its money back, but in advertising and all that kind of stuff, it's really going out with a whimper. It's been a difficult year for superhero movies, for comic book movies. I don't know if it's, and I wouldn't say, like, when people say the word oversaturation, when that for me means there's too much of them and people are getting bored. It's not that there's too much of them; it's that the ones you're churning out are shit. Like, if there was 10 superhero movies this year, but they were all the quality of that we were seeing in Phase 3 of the MCU, we're fucking all over. Give me 10 movies that are great quality. I'll watch them all year. That's fantastic. But it's not just that there's loads of it. It's that there's loads of it and it's shit. The quality has dropped off. The CG has dropped off. Yeah. The effort and the writing, it's just, we're not seeing it. And I'm the only kind of hope I have is that you're hitting these people and these studios where it hurts. They're seeing it in the bank. That's where they're seeing it. They're seeing money lost that maybe this will please God. If anything is going to make them change and put out something different, that hopefully it's the, what we're trying to do now isn't working. Let's fucking change directors, change who's in charge of these things, who is producing, like your overall producer, like Kevin Feige, whoever it is. Like, I think bringing James Gunn in, I don't know how much input James Gunn had into Aquaman 2. I doubt it. I don't think as much.
Very little.
The sounds of it, he's working
just
on
had to be released, you know?
Yeah, he's just working on what the next stage of it is. I've liked the only Superman DC
Legacy
movie,
is the next one. Yeah, 2025.
Yeah, but
so
the two things that James Gunn has put out for DC, though, like Peacemaker TV show was fantastic. And I loved Suicide Squad, his Suicide Squad as well. So over the top violent, so funny, so many great scenes. The one of Harley Quinn breaking out of the prison, you know, is you know,
it's fantastic.
She's shooting, there's all flowers and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's fantastic. That's a lot of fun. John Cena, I love him in that. He's great as a peacemaker. Great cast. You know, I think this is the, if these are the two things, that's the kind of caliber we're going to see from DC. Okay, it's not perfect, but it's a massive step up, you know.
Yeah.
Especially from this.
Hmm.
Yeah. So any closing thoughts on that movie then?
Don't bother watching it. Wait for about 18 months and see if DC can get back to winning ways, because it's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd say I'd give it a 2 out of 5, just because I like the relationship, the two of them.
Yeah.
And I'd say when it comes on to streaming, it'll probably fucking end up on Amazon or Netflix or something. Have a look at some of the scenes just to have a laugh, enjoy the two of them. But you can tune out for a lot of it because it's just garbage. You know what I mean? They could just tell you that will happen because it would probably make as much sense. Cool. Well, with the movie review out of the way, Daz, why don't you give us a little introduction then to our retro corner?
Okay, super duper. So this week we're thinking about what game or movie to put into a retro corner, and with the Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown, I think is out on the 15th of January. After a long wait for a decent Prince of Persia game again, I thought I'd look back to Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time and a general kind of just history. Because when I was looking at this game, I just looked back through the history of the franchise, which kind of spans 35 years back to 1989, which is I didn't realize it went back that far, but I do remember playing the 1989 classic. Which I believe was way before its time. Way before its time, like those graphics, and it was.
That was motion. Classic. Well, whatever motion capture was called back then. Mm. You know, that's what they were using.
Yeah, because the guy who created it, he recorded his brother just doing the actions, doing the animations, and then kind of rotoscoped it frame by frame. That's why those, like, the, you know, especially when he's jumping, grabs onto a ledge and pulls himself up.
Yeah,
that animation,
and his fucking feet,
like,
and everything on it. Yeah,
yeah. This is at a time when we were just getting out of sprites and fucking block characters, you know. But that kind of stuff was that was brilliant. But I think I more remember in 1993, Prince of Persia 2 came out. That's the one I remember most because it was kind of coming into the SNES area or SNES era. There was more vibrant kind of color style and color palette and improved graphics and controls. And I didn't know this came out in 1999, Prince of Persia 3D came out, but I think it was a PC game on Windows, and apparently it was, you know, revolutionary, but I completely missed that. But Ubisoft bought the rights in 2001, and love or hate them, but when they churned out Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, the first in the Prince of Persia, I don't know what the trilogy was called, but it was three games in 2003, 2004, and 2005, which was pretty spectacular to be churning out games of that caliber each year. I thought it was fucking phenomenal. But Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time was where this, and where Prince of Persia in general peaked, for me and for everyone, as critics and consumers alike, like, just loved it and got fantastic scores across all platforms. Like the graphics, they utilized Ubisoft's, they had a new Jade engine, which at the time was just groundbreaking. I remember just the graphics and 3D visuals were a feast for your eyes at the time. I remember the combat and how it totally made you feel like a complete fucking badass. And the platforming was wonderful, challenging. Wall running in particular was a treat. Like that, combined when you're wall running, combining that with a jump onto a pole, back to another wall run, and then falling on an enemy and killing them from the air. It's just like, holy fuck. It's just that, the sense of navigating some of the platforms or platforming sections were fantastic. And when you successfully navigated them, it was you just felt fantastic. But of course, the show-stopping gameplay element was, of course, the prince's ability to manipulate time and even reverse time up to like 10 seconds. This was a game changer. I mean, this is around a lot nowadays in games, but at the time, this really was a game changer. It meant that, like, you know, if combat wasn't going your way and you got it, you know, got too many hits and you lost momentum in your kind of combat streak or whatever, you could rewind time and then redo it again and, you know, dodge that incoming blow that got you the last time. Or if you're wall running and doing one of those intricate sequences and you just miss time something, you just fucking reverse time back along the wall and then start again. And that kind of shit was just fucking, it was groundbreaking, but it was just mind blowing, absolutely mind blowing. And I didn't know this actually, the guy who voices the prince in that is your man Yuri something from Spider-Man. Do you know that?
Yuri Lowenthal, is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, no.
That's fucking unbelievable.
Oh, that's cool.
I thought it was, thought that was really, really cool. He voiced him in 2003, and then in 2004 was the sequel to it, The Warrior Within, but they dumped him for that because they were going with, they opted for like a more grungy vibe, complete with a new voice actor who gave, you know, a more edgy take on the character, which goes along with the kind of more aggressive score and meatier combat. It evolved the series flair for like combat moves and platforming, but definitely whoever was in charge of that was a bit into metal and grunge. Like the score was very fucking a bit meatier and edgier, and it was good. But then Two Thrones followed in 2005, Prince of Persia, The Two Thrones, and that mixed the beauty of Sands of Time with the kind of darker, edgy vibe of Warrior Within, and Yuri returned to voice the character, which was brilliant, and it was a really, really solid entry. But that was the trilogy, essentially, which was just fantastic to have a game like that, of that caliber. Even, like, say, Warrior Within is probably the worst of the three, but it's still, you know, a solid 8 out of 10. Where Sands of Time, I'd probably give a 10 out of 10, easily. The trilogy then, nothing came out until 2008, where they kind of did a soft reboot for some reason, and they rebooted the series with a complete departure in style and tone. Obviously, it must have been a new director at the helm, but that game featured a more stylized version. More stylized visual palette with gorgeous cel-shaded graphics, and the tone was notably lighter and there was less combat, and I think the story was more of a romantic story because you had this kind of companion along with you, this woman who was a ethereal kind of character, and she could revive you at any time, so you could never really die. So it was obviously less complex puzzles, and was more of an emphasis on traversal, and they were obviously going for a more zen-like meditative experience. But yeah, there was a few DS games then in and around that, and there was the Forgotten Sands, I think it was in 2010, and that, yeah, marked the end of the franchise, essentially, until in 2020 Ubisoft revealed that they were going to properly remake Sands of Time from the ground up, with a new engine and everything. Collectively, the world gasped and said, yes, fucking please. And that was slated for 2022, and then it was delayed, and then 2023. And now it seems that game may be in development hell, or as one would say, it may be stuck in time. But yeah, that is a brief overview of Prince of Persia. What are your memories of Sands of Time and any of the other games on that list?
I remember the first one vividly because my cousin Dean had it on a PC, and I was, you know, fucking blown away. Like, I, you know, it looked fucking incredible. Like, I'd been playing, it was on Atari and stuff. So to get down and see this was like, holy shit, you know, it was incredible looking. And I remember the death scene so well because with certain ways that you walk through that you had to time properly. And it was like a grate that, you know, just came from blades, basically, like a, came down from the ceiling and up from the ground. And if you got caught in between them, there was actual blood and everything. And it was like, holy shit, he got impaled and chopped in half. It was like, holy shit. Like, it was all about fucking timing, and it was really, really good. I think but Sansa time was great for me. For someone like me who has OCD, like I play stealth games, you know, and
perfect
games that have stealth levels. And like, if I don't get a perfect run, I just have to restart it. Like, and it doesn't mean it has to be an all stealth game. Like I was replaying Wolfenstein 2 recently, and I'm about to get through the whole level without getting spotted. And like, I was going through it, and I set an alarm off. And I was a good bit into it. I was like, right, fine. Restarted the whole thing. It's like, I have to get it because it gets in my head, and I don't feel right unless I've gotten it done. So being this game and going, okay, I did that wrong. It was reverse time. But I did it. I'll just reverse time. And it was class. But also the wall running has only felt as satisfying to me in one or two other games. Like I think Titanfall 2, you know, definitely. I never played Titanfall 1 actually, but definitely Titanfall 2 and maybe Ratchet and Clank as well. But just that you really felt so many other games you try to do it and you just got to run at the wall and slide down it, you don't get it. It felt really responsive. Considering it was something relatively new to be using in games, I felt it was perfectly responsive. It was really, really good. Mm. I'm still hopeful that we get the remake. That we still get it. But the one that's coming out next week, the reviews have been out today and are really, really good. It's 86 it's got so far on Metacritic. I saw IGN gave it an 8. I'd be delighted to get stuck into that. I heard that the story apparently isn't incredible, but I don't care for Metroidvania kind of game.
Great.
I don't need
too
much story. But yeah, and that's what I'm after from that kind of game. Just cool combat, going back and unlocking different areas, you know. I'm happy to retrace my steps in those kind of games, unlock parts, and you know it's. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that. It seems like one you hammer out in a couple of days, where you know, and then I can get stuck into The Last of Us Part Two. So yeah, I'm looking forward to next week for those two games. But now that's a great summary, Daz. I think you summed up that series pretty well. Like I didn't play every game in the series, but I did very much enjoy the ones that I did play. Sands of Time, of course, stands out for me as the best of the bunch. Should have even made a movie, didn't they? Jake Gyllenhaal, they did Prince of Persia,
failed
Sands
miserably.
Of Time with him.
Yeah,
it did. As we said in one of our previous episodes, as most attempts at adaptations go from video games to screen,
they just
don't go too well. And this was one of the ones that go too well. So look, I think with that out of the way, then we'll wrap up. Just to reiterate to you guys at home, we are now on YouTube. So if you want to watch rather than listen to us, you want to throw it on the background while you're working or something, please do so on any format that you haven't listened on. It'd be amazing if you could like, subscribe, share, all that kind of stuff that people always ask you to do. It'd be great if you could do that for us. That'd help us kind of grow it, because I'm fucking useless at promoting any of this stuff. So it'd be great if you help us out with that. And get involved. Like you said, we love getting this feedback and being able to read out some mails and bits and pieces from you. So if you have anything you'd like to send on to us, or any thoughts on what we've covered, or anything you think we should watch and review, shoot it on to us under whatever social media or email, middleagedgeeks@yahoo.com, or we're on Instagram, Facebook, now on YouTube. Just get in contact. So, but apart from that, look, thanks a million for listening. As always, Daz, is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish up?
Nope, just exactly reiterating what you just said there. Keep the feedback coming, and hopefully we'll have a good movie soon.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, look, take care of yourself, and we will see you all soon. Bye-bye.
See you later.